Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Power of Reinvention. Welcome, everybody. I'm so glad to be here today. I'm super excited to be having a conversation with a very dear, longtime, not old, longtime friend from many years back, Jonathan Bogner. Hi, Jonathan. So good to have you here.
Hi, Kathy. I'm pleased to be here talking to you.
Thank you. We've had some amazing business conversations in the past, and you were really one of my very early champions. I have to say, when I was working on material and posting blogs on the Huffington Post and Thrive Global many, many years ago, before my book came out, you picked up on it and you were intrigued with the topic of reinvention. And we dabbled with the idea of maybe even creating a TV show around it. So I have to thank you for that support, that encouragement. And, you know, here I am all these years later. A book has been published. It came out right before the pandemic. So Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For? Has now been out there on the market. And now a podcast, The Power of Reinvention. So you've kind of been along in this journey, and here we are today getting to talk about you and the journey you have been on. So I'm super excited.
But I feel like it's you. I mean, you know, maybe I was a signpost along the way, maybe a little encouragement, but it's all about you and what you have done and what have you manifested in your life, which is tremendous.
Thank you. I so appreciate that. And, you know, it's really amazing. You and I have had a lot of similarities in our business background with brands and partnerships and content. And you have a very storied career. And I will share a little bit about you for our audience as a successful independent film producer with 15 feature-length movie credits, and your life changed very dramatically in 2007 when you suffered two massive strokes, heart failure and aphasia, which is the inability to speak. I mean, that is just an extraordinarily life-changing moment, and, you know, we're going to talk a bit about that today. But as your bio shares with us, showing indomitable spirit, you retaught yourself to speak and reinvented yourself as a reality television show producer with 10 on-air credits and as an entrepreneur, raising more than $50 million for multiple startups. And then 2022 was another life-altering year when you underwent a heart transplant. Now, 1 year later, you are on top of your game as a business consultant and motivational speaker and an advocate, health patient motivator, which we're going to talk about today as well. So I'm really excited to delve into this, Jonathan. I mean, wow. I mean, not everybody has to overcome those types of challenges and obstacles. And I can't even imagine, I can't begin to imagine the journey, the frustration, the challenges, and the optimism with which you have continued to grow. I know your family, I know your amazing wife, your kids, our kids grew up together when they were younger. So you're surrounded by incredible people, but that has been quite a journey for you. So let's talk about this a little. Maybe we'll do what I don't usually do. I usually start at the very beginning of your life and work our way up, but I feel like starting with where you are now and sort of how you've probably had to dig back into, you know, some of your learnings and, you know, let's talk about what you've been through in the last several years.
Well, I mean, as you told your viewers, I had a massive stroke, life-altering stroke in 2007, and heart failure. And as you mentioned, I had to relearn English, literally. I went through a year of speech therapy. It was very frustrating when I was going through speech therapy. And I barely could say my own wife's name. And the therapist was saying to my wife, with me present in the room, because I couldn't, the synapses in my brain were not connecting, but every time I had to speak, it was a long way around, not the short, narrow way. So I stammered and it was hard for me to express myself. And she was talking to my wife and like, this is what he's going to be like. I don't think he's never going to get much better. And I'm so frustrated to say, I will get better. I will get better and just wait. And, you know, literally I got better. I had what's called a defib in my heart. So people are very familiar with defibs in airports, schools, events. It's where they put paddles on your chest and they say, stand back. I had a implanted defib in my chest, right below my collarbone, and there are leads, well, electrical leads that jumpstart my heart. And I had a defib for, you know, almost 16 years. I had two of them, and it saved my life about 10 times. So literally, the last time was about a year and a half ago, I got two shocks back to back. And then I also, you know, I'm sounding and I'm talking to you, but you know, there were moments of, you know, depression, because I think that is overlooked, especially with men. And you know, I wouldn't say, I mean, you know, there are reasons when you're in so much pain, physical pain, and also mental pain, and sitting in the hospital when everyone has left, your support system has left. Even though you need that support system, you go into certain situations in your life alone. You know, my wife is not holding my hand getting heart transplant. She's not in the operating room when I get the defibrillator.
Yeah.
So it's you go, you have your team, but you go in alone. And so I felt that what was going on with me was, you know, there are moments of, I wouldn't say, you know, I try to say suicide, but there's moments where like, oh my God, is this really worth living? You know, and I'm not a person, I'm an optimistic person, but you go through the ups, you know, really ups and downs and ups and downs, and you know, you bottom out. It's almost like, I wouldn't say a drug addict, but it's similar. So you have rock bottom when your doctor tells you about 2 years ago, look, we need to put you on the list for a heart transplant, but you're really sick, but you're well enough to stay at home. And it's almost counterintuitive when it's like, oh, I should get a heart, but you're deferring the heart because I'm still at home. And I was working out, I was walking, I was doing my normal thing, but it's a little slower. But at the same time, when I went to the cardiologist and I said, you know, I just really, it's hard to walk. It's hard to do certain things. He said, well, let's just do another biopsy. And that biopsy turned into, you know, okay, we're checking you in to the hospital and you're not leaving until you get a new heart. You know, and, you know, literally with the heart, I thought the hard part was getting the heart. You know, it's like, hey, you got a new heart. And really, we all know it's an old heart that has been repurposed to for someone else. So what I know now empirically that, you know, firsthand experience. So that heart has, wouldn't say a life of its own, but it has issues that the former owner of that heart gave you. So in my case, I got a woman's heart because I'm small, and I don't weigh a lot. So I'm about 120, 125 on a good day. I'm about 5'7". So just put it into reference. So I could accept, I could take a woman's heart. I needed the first available heart. But I didn't want to trade one disease for another. I didn't want to have a hep C heart getting, you know, and having another disease when I got a heart. So I got a woman's heart, and that woman's heart, you know, you have that opportunity to like write a letter, you know, and the first month it's like you came back from hospital and, you know, you can't walk up the stairs and, you know, you have, I'm just telling you, it's joy, but you're in so much pain. You know, I wish someone, you know, I went to Cedars-Sinai. They had, they're the number one hospital for heart transplants in the United States. They do more heart transplants, not a doctor or a surgeon.
Right. To tell you the other emotional, mental side of the experience, right?
The truth. Do you know what I'm saying? Because they're more academic
and pragmatic.
Pragmatic, academic, and if you're a surgeon, because you know one of my best friends is a neurosurgeon, they just want to operate. You know, their thrill is the operation. They're not their thrill when they check on you. So my surgeon, his thrill was doing the surgery. But I would love to know what are the. I was going to do the heart transplant no matter what. There's no question I was not going to do it. But I'd love to know the ramifications of getting the heart transplant. But anyway, no one tells you about that. So what I'm saying is when I got the heart transplant and I was going to write a letter to the woman, the first, and I knew it was a woman, didn't know her age, didn't know really much about her. She donated the heart. And I was going to write a letter the first month. Oh, I'm so excited to get that heart. Man, was I excited. And then over the first, the year, and you have a year to write that letter, my, not to say I'm not grateful and for the heart, but there were many, many issues that heart caused me, and it's still causing me. And one of the big issues was I had spasms in the heart. So spasms look like a heart attack. So and I had two spasms a couple months apart, rushed to the hospital, and you know, it's like the ER room is set up for a heart attack. It's like, who are all these people in this room normally? Ready to go. And it's like, and then it just checked. It's, well, it's not a heart attack. We don't know what it is. Well, they're not going to tell you. But trying to take all these tests, they determined it was a spasm. And that was a unique to my donor, right? She had those spasms, or those spasms were dormant, but
I was going to say maybe they didn't. Yeah.
They manifested in me.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was lots of, I don't want to go on and on, but you know, I feel my kind of like new philosophy is, you know, I think people go through depression. I think people go through suicidal thoughts, but you have to figure out a way to manage those emotions. And you have to also incorporate certain things in your life. And I always ate healthy, and I'm much more rigid about what I eat.
Yeah.
And I think whatever you eat, you know, it goes in and out of your body. So it's not like dormant. It's just like, you know, the food that goes in and out. So I try to eat healthy. I'm stopping, give, you know, I'm not, everything is fried. So,
yeah. So I mean, right.
You know, fried food are delicious. I love it, but you know, not right. Everything has to be fried.
Right.
And then health. And you don't realize health is so important until it's taken away from you.
Yeah.
You know, when you're young,
you take it for granted. No question.
Absolutely. And life, whether you're young, old, middle-aged, life can change in boom. You walk. I mean, everyone says, hey, you walk out the door and, you know, I can get into a car accident. Well, I mean, what are the chances?
Yeah.
Nil. Virtually nil. But there is a chance that when you cross over the road with your cell phone, that car is on their cell phone and they run you over.
Yeah. There's always that. But it's also, look, I think, you know, it's so indicative of this notion of living your best life. And to your point, you know, not to be fatalistic, but, you know, you are living proof of the fact that you can have this extraordinary life, this extraordinary family, career, business. Life is moving along right the way you want it to be. And then something like this occurs. And it makes you really question, have you spent your life doing the things that are important to you? I mean, this whole topic of reinvention that I've spent years talking, interviewing people, curating incredible stories, listening to people talk about health, financial, relationships, careers, spiritual. We are complex individuals. There's so many parts to us. And if we are not maximizing and allowing ourselves to feel entitled to create the life that we want, and it does get taken away, or there is a major setback, you know, we don't have to wait for these moments, right, to have that aha moment. We need to think about our lives proactively on those terms and think, if money was no object, if time was no object, if, you know, whatever challenges are in there weren't an object, what would I want to be doing with my life? And, you know, you've had a second and third and fourth lease here on your right. life. So how is that inviting you at this point to think about, you know, and you're still healing and you're still probably going through a lot of challenges that just sort of either slow you down, as you said, or forming words, but you're still so proactively running your business and creating and doing things. Has it kind of given you a different way to look at your life and say, okay, I need to really take advantage of what I get to do with my life now?
Well, Kathy, you know, you raise a lot of great points, and I'm just trying to kind of like, you know,
there was a lot in there. Yeah.
Right. So, I have reinvented myself a lot, and I don't think there's any problem of reinventing yourself, because as you age, you need to set your priorities have changed. So what you're doing in your 20s and your 30s, establishing your career, and then your 30s to your 40s to your 50s, 60s, you're making as much money as you can. What you're telling your listeners is there is chaos in everyone's life, because as a woman, you're a businesswoman. You're a mother. You're a wife. You're multitasking. How do you manage the, and you've got politics in your own office, you know, and you're trying to get a new client. Those things are managing the chaos in everyone's life, whether you're a CEO, whether you're a nurse, whether you're a fireman, you know, you don't want to panic. So how do you work things out? And I mean, when I was in the hospital, they use a word called triage, right? And people go into the hospital like, well, what does that mean, triage? So the sickest people get attention. No, 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 no. The people that they can save get attention. Because if you're dead on arrival, you're last in line. Yeah. So they categorize people of who they can save. So I think my life now has changed in the sense that I want to categorize, prioritize things in my life and simplify things. So I think you, most people, are multitasking because you're doing it on the phone and you know, you're fractured.
Yeah.
You're fractured. So how much are we focusing on our conversation? Because I think you're totally focused on our conversation. But when the conversation is over, you're running a business. You're fractured. So yes. How do you give that quality time and prioritize things in your day? So for me, I think, you know, and it sounds hokey. I mean, you know, even if I say meditate, I breathe. I try to breathe in the morning for 2 minutes.
It's fantastic. It's everything, really.
Right. And it gives you a calmness. Then I meditate or breathing at night, different amount of time. I walk in the morning, right? I think dogs have it in the sense that having a dog, they're only focused on now. They're focused on right now. They don't live in the past. They don't think about the future. They're focused now. And I try to, and I can't do it, but I'm focusing on now and in the future, but I really don't look back at the past because the past, you can't change it. The only thing you can change is you. You can influence your clients. You can influence your spouse or your significant other. But the thing is that you can really change is you. So walking gives me health benefits, and it also works your whole body. And it's you know, in a weird way, the harder you walk, the better you feel at the end of the day. And then I work out. I do these things. I don't do them as a casual observer. I do this every day. So I spend that time. And then my work, I think, is much more efficient. So, you know, I focus on my work. I take out the distractions. I triage whatever I'm going to do. And I don't either. Sometimes I'll do one thing well, but I'm not doing 10 things mediocre. Yeah. And it's a challenge. I'm not saying it's easy, but your work and your health and you know, one of your listeners, I've heard her, she was saying, like, you know, when she goes home, she's focused on her family. When she goes to the school, she's focusing on the school. I mean, that she's kind of got it. In the sense that those are priority times and she has to focus on those, that moment in time.
Yeah.
And also I feel like, you know, it's like health, exercise, a little bit of meditation and, you know, what are you doing to reward yourself? Because we're so stingy about giving ourselves some pat on the back. Now, I've got an Apple Watch, okay? They don't send me gifts. They don't do anything. But the watch says, good job. You know? it's just like, and I like it.
It's like a little hit of dopamine. And you're right. Yeah. We are so stingy with ourselves. We're so quick to have that negative voice, the I didn't do it right, I should have done this, this wasn't that. We don't do that for ourselves and we don't take the time to pat ourselves on the back. I talk about this in my book where I say, you know, if you want to reinvent some part of your life, break it down into incremental steps, one baby step at a time. And every time you check the box on one little baby step, reward yourself, whether it's a piece of chocolate, a walk in the park, a new outfit, whatever that thing is that allows you to have that positive acknowledgement, that is going to encourage you to want to create that again for yourself and create it again for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I love that you're acknowledging the importance of validating and patting ourselves on the back, because if we're not going to do it, no one else is going to do it for us. And it's lovely. We all love a compliment here or there, but if we can't take care of ourselves that way, if we can't teach ourselves to stop and breathe and have focus, mm-hmm. we're not going to be able to generate what we need in our lives for ourselves. And we are in the driver's seat. We are the pilots of our lives.
But I think that is overlooked. Who is driver, right? You know, and everyone's like, automatic vehicles, so you don't even have to drive.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm saying, you know, we are in the driver's seat of our own lives, not anyone else's life. I figured that out with my kids. I you know, you only get 10 years where you can control them. The first 10, maybe, you know, but as a teenager, no way. I mean, I've seen your kids, no way. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, you know, I have reinvented myself from an accountant to a music supervisor to a producer to a reality producer. I mean, I actually, the first time I realized I could not speak, I had the aphasia, and I got my son an agent, and I got my son a manager. You know, I couldn't even write, so it's not like I lost one modality and I can use another modality. So if you ever read anything I was reading or writing, it's like, I mean, I always joke with my wife. She likes speak stroke. So it's like, you know, it's like, okay, Cindy, you know what I'm saying? Can you explain that to someone?
Translate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, well, what he didn't mean that what this is what he meant. And you know, the show that we finally sold was a show called Party Prince. We sold it to E! And I didn't have to say a word. And it's the power of like moving your hands around, and you sold a show and you didn't say a word because they didn't know that I couldn't speak. You know, the buyers, the agent knew, the manager knew.
Right.
My son knew, but they didn't know. And we sold the show in the room. It's almost like you get people together, they're going to sell each other. So you should just stand back.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I learned that, like, just you're going to get in because everyone has an ego and everyone wants to acknowledge that they contribute. But sometimes the relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and I mean, like, the first movie, you know, I went to Sundance, we sold our movie, came back the next day. I was foolish. I had a myocarditis, which I didn't realize, and came home, stroke. Then, you know, I was, you know, because of when you get a defib, and the defib goes off, it's scary, okay?
Yeah.
So then I had PTSD. It's like, I can't go to bed because if I go to bed, I'm going to get shocked. So you have to deal with that. And then, you know, I had pulmonary edema. I had, you know, my ejection fraction when I was 45 was about 15. So that means the amount the heart pumps in, pumps out. So most people, you know, are doing around, you know, 50 to 55. I was 15, 16 years ago. When I got the heart transplant, I was 9. I mean, nine, you can't, you know, you really can't even get out of bed. So then I had pulmonary edema and got the heart transplant. My donor had her own issues that I inherited.
Yeah.
And you know, all the drugs I'm on have
right.
caused me side effects. You know, I mean, I am diabetic, or I was not a diabetic, but all the drugs I'm on make me a diabetic.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then, all these drugs also, you have to have like what's called necropathy. So, you can't feel the nerve endings in your, like, for me, it's my feet, but it's usually hands and feet. So it's like, okay. Don't know what's going on with my foot, but then, you know, and then they had to pull out my thyroid. They had to pull out my gallbladder, which I went into the hospital thinking I'm just giving them my heart. And now they like, okay, they pulled out my gallbladder. Well, you don't really need it anyway. Well, I went in with it. I'd like to come out with
right,
it.
Like to keep it right.
I'd like, yeah. I don't know what you think. I don't need it, but you know. And then, you know, then all the meds, you know, you're like precancerous. So it's like you're, you know, you have to walk around, you know, fully closed. And then, you know, and then, you know, and then right now I've got like eye floaters, which is a direct result of having another issue because it causes disruption in your retina. So I deal with this and it's ongoing.
Yeah. And I was going to say, like, you really, there are so many, I'm just listening to the number of things that you physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually are dealing with. I have to ask, when you wake up in the morning, like you've got this incredible business and career that you just lean into, like, is that what pulls you through the days? Is that, you know, how do you wake up in the morning and feel excited, or what do you feel excited about? Because you are an extraordinary example of someone who is juggling and trying to manage all of these health challenges. And I know you well enough. I've known you for years, and we don't spend a lot of time together talking anymore, but from the conversations we have, and I hear you, you have this unbelievable outlook on your life and this unbelievable motivation to continue to build and create and do wonderful things. So how do you do that?
You know what? Again, talking about your book, Reinventing, and I, you know, I would say the entrepreneurial adventures that I've had, I don't know if they're going to be successful or not. You know what I'm saying? They're, you know, they've got people that run them. And I again, I'm not in control. I thought I was in control, which I was never in control. So it's like, if they're going to succeed or not, they're going to succeed with or without me. So, you know, and then, so, you know, and then the other things that, you know, I'm still trying to create a reality show, not a reality show about my life, but, you know, I'm trying to sell things now.
Yep.
Because
yep.
You know, 2 years I couldn't do anything, so let's see if we can right. sell a reality show. But at the same time, you know, I go through, you know, the ups and downs. I get depressed, I get this, you know, delusional, I get upset. You know what I feel like, what makes life worth living is your, how you construct your life and friends. You can't pick your family. And clearly, you know about me. So, you know, you can pick your friends, and I reconnected with certain friends, and discarded certain friends too. But you know, I'm, would you say, what is it like, when you cultivate people, or, you know,
curate, right? You're curating. Well, brilliant. I mean, right. As we should, really.
Right. I'm curating my life, but you know, I take that time to walk with a friend, and you know, it's interesting. Like men, I don't know what women feel, but men typically don't want to say like, you know, you're my best friend, you know, be emotional.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it's the woman's heart in me. So I'm a little much more emotional, and I'm telling my friends, like, you know, I really cherish you.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't expect them to say anything to me, you know what I'm saying?
No, but you must have sort of that look after all of these life-changing health issues and challenges and moments where you questioned, you know, am I going to be here tomorrow? I think we do value and appreciate you. It makes sense that you would have that, and to curate what matters and reprioritize. I also find, Jonathan, and I'm having this conversation with a lot of people now, you know, as we get older, we do start to really realize where we want to expend our energy and our time and value our time. So we do kind of curate our lives more carefully. We realize we don't need to tolerate certain people and certain things anymore the way we might have. And it's okay. And it is certainly not just okay. It's almost necessary, because we're in, you know, a phase of our lives where we've earned the right. And we also know what we value, and that's the most critical thing. I mean, for anybody who wants to reinvent any part of their lives, connecting with ourselves and understanding what we value is the way forward, to really make sure we check in with ourselves. And you've had to do a lot more than just check in with yourself. Mm-hmm. So to check in with ourselves and understand where we're going to prioritize the things in our lives that are important, we need to understand that we are all entitled to have that. We are entitled to create what we want. And circumstances, life, 20 years of doing one thing and realizing when you wake up one day that this is really not the life you want, fine, do something about it. Mm-hmm. You've got the opportunity and you have the right to create what you want. So I think the fact that you've been sort of forced into this maybe a little bit faster than other people because of your health challenges has been, you know, some of a blessing. I mean, I'm sure you could have done without it in a lot of ways, but in a way you're taking the best of it. And that's why I was kind of asking you before, and I'm sorry that we're going to have to wrap up in a moment, but what is it that excites you when you wake up in the morning? It's not taking those medications. It's not visiting another doctor, but there is something that is pulling you through every day when you get out of bed to kind of go, hey, I may be a quote victim of all of this, but I choose not to play that card.
Well, you said victim. I don't want to be a victim of circumstances.
Right.
Okay. That is anathema to me. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to be proactive. So what I want to be a patient, literally patient, and be a patient of circumstances. So whatever has happened to me or will happen to me in the future, I don't know. All I can do is today. And what motivates me, one, I love what I'm trying to do, talking to you and sharing my story, because it could have been worse.
Yeah.
I don't know how much worse.
I know. But
you know, 25 things that go wrong with a person, quite a lot. But yeah. And they're serious medical issues. But I'm a survivor. And yeah, my sense of humor helped me. My friendships have helped me. My wife has helped me. I get out of the morning. In the morning, I do my walk. I try to work. I focus on one task at a time. And at the end of the day, I set up priorities in my day. I want to be purposeful in what I'm going to do. You have to get up with a purpose. If you don't get up, if you wake up in the morning and there's no purpose, you're at the end, right? You have to wake up with purpose, whether it's your goat herding, your flock of goats, you wake up and you do it. I have to wake up and have I have to wake up and do things within my within my life. And I have my priorities and I have my purpose. So that is what I'd want to do moving forward, reinventing myself. I would like to have more podcasts because I think I've got a valuable lesson to say. You have to have hope. And it starts with you.
Yeah.
Not anyone else. No one can say, be hopeful. It starts with you.
Yeah.
You have to hit rock bottom, whether it's health-wise, other problems that people have, mm-hmm. and then figure out a way to help yourself. And what I've done is you have to also be optimistic, you know, hope and hope and being optimistic about the future. If you just wake up and you have no purpose, but turn on the TV and someone's going to help you, you know, what is the reason that you're living? Honestly, let's be honest. But you, if you have purpose, you wake up and you have to do something. That's what I want to do. I'd like to do more podcasts. I want to be a motivational speaker. That's the next chapter of me.
That was my next question. And I just so love that you have that clarity and you will create it because that's who you are. You manifest and create the things around mm-hmm. you. And I so appreciate you being able to tell this, share your story. You know, so many people out there are struggling with just, they may not be health issues. They could be life challenges, business challenges. You know, they're trying to figure out how do I get off the dime and reinvent some part of my life. And there's a gnawing feeling that this isn't everything I want it to be. So how do I create something new? And that's what these conversations are about. It's so that people can understand and relate to, wow, if Jonathan can do what he's doing, I got this. And I so appreciate the inspiration that you are to people in being able to realize that whatever they're grappling with may not be quite as inhibiting or limiting as they think it is compared to maybe what you've had to deal with. So I think, you know, the message here is to have hope, to dig deep, to think about your values in life, to understand the purpose of your life, not someone else's terms, but your own life and what that means to you, and create that for yourself. That's what this is about. This is why we talk about reinventing. You have the license to do what you want with your life. You've got to figure out what that is and put one foot in front of the other, baby steps if that's what it takes, reward yourself along the way, acknowledge the good things that you are doing for yourself and thrive on that dopamine that you get from taking care of yourself, walk, breathe. These are some of the most basic mm-hmm. fundamentals, and yet they're so powerful. And I think, Jonathan, you've really helped highlight that today in this conversation. And for someone who's been through all that you have been through, to be able to say what you have said is a gift. It's a gift to all of us. And I hope that people listen and share this conversation with friends and family, and that you have a chance to share your story with more people as well. I really thank you for this.
Well, thank you for inviting me on your podcast. I really appreciate that. And hopefully there'll be more. And if not, they're not. But I'm saying I want to manifest what I want to do for the rest of my life, giving and expressing, you know, there has to be some hope. And I feel like, thank you for inviting me on your show. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. And you and I will continue to talk, not on a podcast, and just explore all the other fun things in our business lives together. So thank you again for those tuning in and listening. Lots of fabulous conversations and content at the reinventionexchange.com. You can pick up a copy of my book, listen to great podcasts, virtual chat events, all kinds of incredible links and access to things that are going to inspire you, conversations that will motivate you to live your life. So happy reinventing, everybody, and thank you for being here. Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.